I have some verses I'd like for you to look up and have ready to read when we come to it. Acts 10, 34 and 35.
Acts 10, 24.
34 and 35. Yeah. Acts 10, 34 and 35. Yeah. Deuteronomy 1, 17.
Deuteronomy 1, 17.
1 Corinthians 9, 20 through 23.
1 Corinthians 9.
20 through 23. Mark 12, 41 through 44.
Mark
12, 41 through 44. 2 Corinthians 6, 10. 2 Corinthians 8, 1 through 5.
Go ahead.
2 Corinthians 8, 1 through 5.
Romans 8, 16 through 18. Mark 10, 17. That's Matthew 10, 17.
Matthew 10, 17.
1 Corinthians 6, verses 6 through 8.
1 Corinthians 6, 6 through 8.
Leviticus 19, 18.
Leviticus 19, 18.
Matthew 5, 43 and 44.
Matthew 5. 43 and 44.
Mm-hmm. Mark 7, 6 through 9.
Mark 7, 6 through
9. Galatians 5, 13 through 15.
Galatians 5, 13 through 15.
John 12, 47 and 48.
John 12, 47 and 48.
Romans 10, 9 and 10.
Romans 10, 9 and 10.
Matthew 12, 36 and 37.
Matthew
12, 36
and 37.
Matthew
5, 7. Matthew
5, 7. Ephesians 2, 8 through 8 and 9.
Ephesians 8.
No, 2, 8 and 9.
8 and
9. Galatians 6, 10.
Galatians 6, 10.
1 John 3, 18.
1 John 3, 18.
Deuteronomy 6, 4 and 5.
Deuteronomy 6, 4 and 5.
Matthew 8, 28 and 29.
Matthew 8, 28 and 29.
Galatians 3, 29.
Galatians 3, 29.
Genesis 15, 6.
Genesis 15, 6.
John 15, 14.
John 15, 14.
Thank you. We're ready to start with chapter 2 tonight in our study of the book of James. Verse 1 reads, "My brethren, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of personal favoritism." Would it be correct to say that personal favoritism is selfishness? Certainly would. Was personal favoritism a problem in the first century? How do you know? Pretty good answer. He's talking about it. Why would he be talking about something that wasn't an issue that needed to be dealt with? Can you give me an instance in which favoritism was pretty strong in the first century?
There was one saying, "Well, I was baptized by
Ham." Okay. That's the people in Corinth that had their favorite preacher, and one like Paul, one like Peter, one like somebody else. And all right, what realization did Peter reach when he entered into the home of Cornelius the very first time? Would you read for me Acts 10, 34 and 35?
Then Peter began to speak, "I now realize how true it is that God does not show favoritism, but accepts men from every nation who fear him and do what is right."
Yes. What home was Peter in on this occasion?
Cornelius.
Home of Cornelius. Cornelius was what? A Gentile. Should Peter have had any difficulty going in there?
No, but he did.
That's true. You'll remember that on the day of Pentecost, Peter indicated that we are not to show any favoritism. Do you remember how he indicated that?
because he had the vision of the sheep coming down from
the...
No, that's in chapter 10. This is back in chapter 2 of Acts, on the day of Pentecost.
When they said we're not...
I'm sorry?
Everyone is sleeping out in another language.
Yes, and that was the way that they were intended to understand that the gospel's for everybody. Doesn't make any difference what language you speak, where you're from, it's for you. But the people hearing their own native tongue, what was being said, were surprised that they were hearing in their own native language. What surprised them?
These common men speak in these different languages.
Yeah, what surprised them?
They were
Galileans. Yes, what is meant by the fact that they were Galileans?
Bunch of hicks.
I'm sorry?
Bunch of hicks.
All right, he said it, I didn't. I would rather say they were from the Bronx, but that's all right. They did have a brogue, and when they were in the southern area of the Holy Land, they usually were not called upon to say anything publicly because of the way in which they talked. They were people that were easily distinguished by their brogue. And now they're hearing these men, all from Galilee, speaking in the languages that represent all the people that are present that day, which were several. Several thousand people were present that day. So they asked the question, what does this mean? And how did Peter answer that question?
God's Spirit would fall upon all men.
Yes, he answered by quoting the second chapter of the prophet Joel. He said, this is that which is spoken by the prophet of Joel. Then he began to quote it. And the passage in Joel said, I will pour forth of my spirit upon all mankind. Now, was he speaking to a prejudiced audience? Probably no one more prejudiced than the audience he had that day. The Jews were highly prejudiced against the Gentiles. By the way, the feeling was mutual. And it was also a strong prejudice between the Samaritans and the Jews. And particularly with the Jews, because the Samaritans were a people that once were Jew, but they intermingled their blood with Gentiles through marriage, and thus lost the purity of their identity. So that really bothered them. So we do have ample evidence in the Scripture that there was a strong prejudice. Now, Peter, for 10 years, has not gone into the home of a Gentile. Even though, on the first day the church got started, on the day of Pentecost, he clearly indicated that what you witnessed today in hearing the language, your own language, the message we're preaching, is indication that God is not a respecter of persons. But he continued to speak only to the Jews. How did God finally get him into a Gentile home? A vision, that's right. Now, visions were the way in which God spoke in times past. Not often in the church age, but this is one exception. And in his vision, he saw what appeared to be something like a great sheet coming down from heaven. And on this sheet were what? Clean and unclean animals. So with the vision of these clean and unclean animals, he heard a voice. What did the voice say to him? Yes, get up, kill them and eat them. And what was his answer?
No.
Why not? I am a strict Jew. I don't eat anything that's unclean. And the Lord said what? Don't you call unclean what I have cleansed. Did that happen more than once?
Yes, three times.
Now, God's timing is always right. At the end of the third time, what happened? There's a knock at the gate. And there were three men there to invite him to come with them to speak to Cornelius and his household. And the timing is great. Peter got some of his Jewish friends to go along with him. And they then made the journey to Caesarea, and he entered this home. And when he entered that home, he indicated that he now realizes that God is not one to show partiality. And yet partiality continued to exist even after that time. Number four, is James suggesting that Christians sometimes show favoritism in dealing with others?
Yes.
Christians? How do you know?
Because we do.
I'm sorry?
Because we do.
All right, she's fessing up here. How else can we know? We're human. Oh my. Yeah, how does he say so in this verse?
Because he says not to do it, and so people.
Who's he talking to?
Christian.
My brethren, right. So there's the clue. He's not talking to those outside the faith. He's talking to those who share a common faith together, addressing them as my brethren. Now, is it possible to believe in God and yet have a wrong attitude?
Yes,
and that's exactly the kind of problems he's dealing with. Was showing favoritism a violation of the Jewish law? Would you read Deuteronomy 1:17?
Do not show partiality in judging. You're both small and great alike. Do not be afraid of any man, for judgment belongs to God.
All right, so this is nothing new to the people. This is not unique to the Christian faith. This is a part of the Jewish faith also. You should not show partiality. And yet, that continues to be a problem even in our present day. Now, in what various ways do Christians sometimes show favoritism? Let me suggest some ways, and you tell me if you agree with me. Do you think that we ever show favoritism through misunderstanding? Have you ever had an attitude based upon wrong information about another individual that caused you not to deal with that individual like you should have? I think misunderstanding is one way. Do you think that anybody ever shows partiality through personal pride?
Yes.
I was a member of a civic club years ago and invited a friend of mine to go to the club meeting. And while there, I introduced him to a man. And when my friend acknowledged being introduced to him, he said, "I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Tabor." And Mr. Tabor said, "Dr. Tabor." I wonder if he felt maybe just a cut above everybody else because he is a doctor. I think personal pride gets in our way. Do you think anybody ever has prejudice because of brainwashing?
Yeah.
Have you ever known of anyone to grow up in a family where they learned not to appreciate certain people because of the attitude that they saw toward those people by their own parents?
Yeah.
That's what you call brainwashing. That happens all too often, unfortunately. Do we ever show partiality because of past experiences? Yeah, sometimes our dealings with people and the experience we've had has caused us to show partiality. I was a guest one Sunday morning for breakfast in a home in Illinois where I was to be the guest speaker for their congregation that day. And while we were seated around the breakfast table, the lady of the house said to me, "Why is it that all Christian preachers are Republicans?" I said, "Well, you're telling me something that I don't know." I said, I'm not aware of that. In fact, I don't know how anybody could make a statement like that. I don't begin to know who all the Christian preachers are. And if I didn't know, I would not know their politics. I don't go around asking people their political stand. And I said, "I do happen to know a Christian church preacher who preaches for a church not many miles away from here who's running on the Democratic ticket for a public office." So I said, "Your statement is really not true." She said, "Well, it appears to be that way." I said, "Well, you know something that I don't know." And then she said this to me, "My husband is such a strong Democrat that if the Satan himself ran on the Democratic ticket, he would vote for him." I thought, what an admission. And her husband's sitting right there at the breakfast table. What am I supposed to say? I get out my Bible and turn to the book of James, right, and say, "We've got to have a Bible study here. This is not right. You don't have these kinds of personal prejudices." But it's really interesting how a lot of people come up with some very interesting thoughts and about what they think about other people. And this isn't even in the church. Well, James says, no, no, no. This is not right. Now, does personal favoritism hinder the effectiveness of our Christian witness? Would you read 1 Corinthians 9, verses 20 through 23?
And unto the Jews I became as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without law, as without law. Be not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without law. To the weak I became as weak, that I might gain the weak. I made all things to all men, that I might be all men save some.
All right, so he becomes identified with the people he's trying to reach. Is that important?
Yes.
Yes, it is. I have to confess that in my early ministry, there were two groups of people that I really found difficult to call upon. One group was the extremely poor, and the other group was extremely rich. Does it ever occur to you that in most of our churches, they're made up mostly of white middle-class Americans? Where are the extremely poor? Where are the extremely rich? Where are the people of color? Where are the people that are different than we are? That's interesting, isn't it? I wonder if prejudice might still be a problem. I was, right after we were married, I served a church in the Indianapolis area. And it was on the north side of Indianapolis where a lot of affluent people live. I called upon the man who was, he was a Jew, his wife was a Catholic. He was the owner of the third largest department store in Indianapolis. And I was scared to death, but they lived in our community, so I knew I needed to call on them. I couldn't have talked to more gracious people than those two individuals. Did I get to first base with him? No. He stopped by one day when he passed by my house. I was out mowing the yard, and he said, hey, what about going out and play tennis with me Sunday morning? I said, well, that's not really a good time for me. I didn't make any points with him at all. You know, he was very friendly. He was willing to play tennis, but he wouldn't come to church. I called up a man that owned the largest furniture store in Indianapolis and made their own furniture. And he became a member of our congregation. I called upon an individual that was a world-famous architect. Had to his credit, designed buildings that really made him famous all over the world. His house was the most interesting house. One wall had a map of the world, and on that map of the world it showed every place where he's been. He'd been everywhere, I think. I thought, man, I'm not at all comfortable here. But I baptized that man into Christ. We have to do things that are not easy for us. So I appreciate what Paul is saying here. We become all things to all men, that by all means we might save some. We'll save them all, but we've got to identify with people, and we cannot place ourselves in their company as if we're ill at ease, though we may be. We try to be at ease. We try to be understanding. And but that's a challenge to us. So I wonder if many times we might have prejudice, a favoritism that we're not even aware of. Because our actions speak louder than our words.
And sometimes it's, in my personal experience, I wouldn't have the confidence or the courage to talk to the person because I would be the go-between between the Bible and Christ and this individual. So that means I've got to relate to that person. The more things we got in common, the easier it would be to do this relation, to make the introduction. If you're so far away, you may not get a chance to make any introduction. So someone that you can relate to, you've got a better chance at starting the ball.
That's true. And I think that many times when we want to witness to some people, we need to learn to be good listeners and not try to do all the talking. Many times when you meet a total stranger, you think, okay, how do I talk to this person? Well, most people like to talk about themselves. So one of the easiest things for us to do is to ask them about themselves. Where do you come from? What are you doing here? What's been your life's work? What has been your most memorable experience in your life? Where have you been? What's your hobby? And what are you doing? You're just giving them an opportunity to talk. And the more they talk, the more your curiosity is going to be aroused. Is that not true? And you're going to have additional things to ask them about. Had a wedding one time, and the parents of the bride were members of the congregation that I was serving at that time. And they said, we're going to have a dinner, but I don't think you'll want to come to it because you'll not approve of the behavior of the groom's parents. I said, what's that? I said, well, and then they told me all the things that they would be doing and saying and the things they'd be drinking and all that sort of stuff. I said, yeah, I want to be there. And I said, if you can arrange it, I'd like to sit right across the table from them. Folks, I never heard a bad word. And they didn't take even one sip of liquor while I was there. I